Welcome to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI, your home for the politically homeless. You won't be part of the most dangerous radio show on the airwaves. You give us a call at 1-888-312-5757. That's 1-888-312-5757 or text us at 206-421-5757. Coming up at 545, your chance to win fantabulous prizes during our good news giveaway. Plus, we're going to be talking to our friend Lars Larson and so much more. But before we get to any of that, time for your daily dose of adrenaline.
You want me to stick this into my heart? Are you nuts?
Yesterday, in the last hour of our show, we got this news about this Chinese spy balloon that is apparently hovering over the continental United States that the Biden administration refuses to shoot down, refuses to do anything about. Apparently, the way they first noticed this thing, or at least the way the public first became aware of this thing, was through commercial airliners of people looking out the window and seeing this sucker. That's why apparently it had been here since Monday or Tuesday, and we only found out about it on Thursday because, you know, the average American doesn't have balloon or any kind of airplane tracking equipment. Here's some exclusive audio of people from that commercial airliner noticing what's outside.
Look at him. He's heading for that small moon.
I think I can get him before he gets there. He's almost in range.
That's no moon. It's a space station.
I mean, that's really what this thing looks like. It's a giant, giant, giant balloon. We live in the most absurd, absurd time and place in history. Why? Because you should have seen the chyrons on the news today about the balloon. Holy cow. All anybody could talk about was the balloon. What they have here? I took a few screenshots of these. Pentagon, we are only tracking one balloon. Pentagon, we are reviewing all options to deal with balloon. People are losing their minds over this. Absolutely. And the thing apparently spent a long time hovering over Montana. Isn't this why we have the Space Force? Oh, Donald Trump was right again. Threats from China. Space Force, because planes don't go that high, or they do go that high, depending on how high it is. I mean, isn't this something the Space Force could deal with? We go now to Captain Jean-Luc Picard and Commander William Riker of the United States Space Force.
We're firing at the surface. Location?
Western Hemisphere. North American continent. It's like a missile complex in central Montana.
Missile complex. The date. Data. I need to know the exact date.
April 4th, 2063.
April 4th. The day before first contact.
Precisely.
Then the missile complex must be where Zefram Cochrane is building his warp ship.
That's what they came here to do. Stop first contact.
How much damage, Lieutenant?
Can't tell. Long-range sensors are still offline.
We have to go down there, find out what happened. Data, Beverly, you're with me. Have a security team meet us in transporter room 3. Computer, mid-21st century civilian clothing. Number one, you have the bridge.
Ah, now we see what's going on. Why is it over Montana? All kidding aside, that's where a whole bunch of our nuclear missile silos are. That's why it's over there. But I got a question. Doesn't China have satellites? In fact, don't they have a whole lot more satellites than us? Isn't that why we said we needed the Space Force for, was to deal with these satellites and stuff? Why would they send the balloon? Why would they send it? Now, a lot of people, guys, flat earthers out there, the world is not an atlas. It is round. They didn't send it across the Pacific, so it didn't come across Washington. We didn't see it out the windows of our news studio overlooking the Puget Sound and go, hey, what's that? That's not what happened. It came over the pole and went from Montana. It apparently hung out there for a few days. And yet it's just staying there. Hey, President Joe Biden, what should we do about the balloon?
The recalibration.
Well, thank you. That was very, very helpful. So how about we go to the Pentagon and see what they have to say about this?
Considering that this is a surveillance balloon, as you said, does it have ability to collect very sensitive data, given that it flies over nuclear sites in the state of Montana?
Yeah, so again, I'm not going to get into intelligence. As we mentioned in our statement last night, once the balloon was detected, we acted immediately to protect against the collection of sensitive information, and I'll just leave it at that.
What did you do? Are we doing World War II style stuff? Did you fog in the whole thing? Because I think they got cameras these days that beat the fog. Do you guys put shields up? Oh, really, what did you do to stop it? Because as far as I could tell, you have a balloon, you have a spy device from a hostile foreign country that is over the continental United States, and you guys haven't done anything about it. Nothing at all. Is it a threat to us? Is it something we should be worried about?
We've detected and is tracking a high-altitude surveillance balloon that is over the continental United States right now, as you all know. It does not present a military or physical threat to people on the ground. President Biden was briefed, as I just stated, and he asked the military to present options. It was the strong recommendation by Secretary Austin, Chairman Milley, the commander of Northern Command, not to take kinetic action because of the risk to safety and security of the people on the on the ground.
The safety to people in Montana. There's tens of people in Montana. What are you worried about? Shoot this thing down. Now, what you guys could have said is you could have said something like, we don't know what's inside this balloon. We don't know if we shoot it, what's going to come out of it. But they're not saying that. They're saying it's not a threat. You have a hostile foreign country's military asset spying on the U.S. and they've lied about it. They said it was a weather balloon. Oh, haven't heard that one before. That's like Area 51 stuff. They said, oh, it just went off course. Now they're saying they're going to let it drift over the Atlantic Ocean and then shoot it down. I have a question. This thing went through Canada first. Trudeau didn't do anything? Trudeau didn't give the U.S. a heads up? Hey, this thing's on the way? What are we paying our military for if they can't track things like this? So we've got this thing coming at us. Are we going to try and capture it? We're going to do anything about it?
Will the United States attempt to capture this balloon while it is in U.S. airspace?
Oh my gosh. As you heard from...
You heard that? Oh my God. The exhaustion. The frustration. How dare they ask me about the balloon from a hostile foreign government that is over the continental United States.
For my colleague, they are clearly keeping an eye on the balloon and going to continue to monitor it. We're not going to give any more specifics than that, but it is something that the Pentagon is keeping a close eye on, and I'm just not going to get ahead of the flight path or the pattern or anything like that.
Keeping a close eye on it, just like Nora. Nora's keeping a close eye on it, just like Santa. Right? Oh, this is so nice. It's like Santa. Look where Santa is in the United States right now. Isn't that cute? Isn't that wonderful? Let's get Santa. Sure. By the way, don't you think we have a right to know? It seems like they're hiding a lot of stuff from us.
Position of the balloon classified?
Phil, right now, what we're not going to do is get into a hour-by-hour location of the balloon. Again, we're monitoring it closely. As I mentioned, right now, it's over the center of the continental United States. That's about as specific as I'm going to get.
But I understand my being convenient, but does the public not have a right to know if the balloon is over
the public
their
certainly
state?
Has the ability to look up in the sky and see where the balloon is.
Oh, just look up in the sky for the balloon. I know how we take care of this sucker.
Begin laser ignition! I'm in the laser! Laser arm!
Yeah, why don't we just do that? Let's get the Jewish space laser. I got the keys this weekend. Let's go balloon hunting. The truth is that this is a trial balloon, pun intended. It's what fits the facts. China wanted to see how much they could mess with the West and when they would actually react. And we failed the test. We're not doing anything about it at all. What a lot of people don't understand is what's going on right now. Is we have negotiations going on in the Far East. Blinken told President Xi that the meeting that he was supposed to have with him will be postponed because of this Chinese spy balloon. You think they cared about that meeting? How many times has Blinken been made to look like an idiot in front of these guys? How many times? This is likely about Taiwan. That's my guess. They want to see how much they can push the West and if they'll do anything. They saw what happened in Afghanistan. We buggered out of there. They saw what happened in Ukraine. And now they're saying, what if we actually do something to the U.S.? What if we poke the bear? What will happen? And the answer is Joe Biden and these woke generals we have will do absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. You got to imagine the whole world. In fact, mostly China is just laughing at us. Look how they're covering all this stuff. Look how insane it is. We go to the KVI studio line, take a call from Greg in Everett. Greg, what's happening?
Hey, Ari. Good job with the Star Trek contact.
Thank
that was great.
You.
I love that.
Thank you.
You know, with the exception of the Borg, you know, I mean, geez. Yeah, I was telling your call screen one possibility reason why Biden didn't shoot down the balloon, because he figured that once it entered America, shrinkflation would have kind of taken it down to acceptable
level. No, the inflation from the U.S. economy would keep it afloat, my friend. What are you talking about? In fact, we're waiting for stagflation to take down the balloon. After all, inflation and this balloon do have its ups and downs, don't they? I could do this all day, dude.
Well, you know, the other thing is also that this is back in the Clinton era. You remember this one, but they did a scenario, I talked about a scenario of somebody taking a small tactical nuke over Nebraska about a little higher than where the balloon is and detonated, would have sent an EMP blast out, which would have, you know, crippled us.
Yeah, that was the big theme of all the 90s and early 2000s movies, right? Oh, just get an EMP. It went from we need a nuclear bomb to an EMP. It's so much more dangerous. Wasn't that the whole plot of GoldenEye? Greg, appreciate the call. Appreciate you being part of the show. You want to be part of the show, you give us a call at 1-888-312-5757 or text us what you think is going on with the balloon at 206-421-5757. A lot of people want to talk about the balloon, so we go back to the KVI studio line, take a call from David in Polesburg. David, what's up?
Hey, Ari. It struck me today that I know a little bit about Chinese culture, and I think they want us to shoot that thing down because it's filled with bioweapons. They didn't get us all with COVID, and I think they're still after us with some form of germ warfare.
Well, let me ask you this, David. Let me just ask you this for a second. I've seen a whole bunch of the Mission Impossible movies, and apparently thermal signatures can tell you where bioweapons are. In the rock, according to thermal imaging, we know where the VX poison gas, that it's in the morgue. So don't they have ways of telling what's actually inside the balloon? You think that's why they haven't shot it down yet?
Well, what you're talking about is a little bit beyond my pay grade as far as identification, but I think that there are some infrared / electronic means to see what the density of a container is or something behind it. However, you know, the Chinese are clever, and I think if there was a way to mask it, they would look for it. Now, is it possible that they want to monitor what we're doing telecommunications-wise? That's possible, too. Now, as far as an EMP blast, yeah, but you know something? That's not sneaky enough. I think they want us to shoot the sucker down so we spread the virus ourselves.
I got to tell you, David, is that for me, I always look for the simplest explanation. And the simplest explanation is just they wanted to see how much they could push Biden before he would push back. That's the only thing I can think of, because don't forget who we're talking about here. We're talking about this guy.
The recalibration.
That's who's on the other end of the orders. David, appreciate the call. Appreciate you being part of the show. Balloon Palooza continues on the KVI studio line. Ted in Kent. Ted, what's up?
Ari, they really missed something. They missed the opportunity to bring the thing down in a controlled manner in a sparsely populated area. What if on its own it fails and drops in an urban area?
Yeah, that's a risk also. And from what I hear, this isn't the first one we've had to deal with. This is just the first one we know about.
I did a search and I didn't find any other reports. It was a quick search. So I didn't find any other reports. I really do think it's a political calculation, as you said. And you know, we need leaders that will stand up and protect us.
Yeah.
You know, it's really that simple.
I'll tell you, I mean, I'm looking at all this stuff on the text line coming in, and people are ticked about this. And I really got to wonder, at what point do Democrats lose faith in the Democrats in power protecting them? At what point do you go, we don't want this guy, Joe Biden, being the guy behind the little red button because we're afraid of what's going to happen next? We're afraid of our country, for our country's future. Ted, appreciate the call.
When they run out of When they run out of Brie and Chablis, I guess. I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, appreciate the call. Appreciate you being part of the show. You won't be part of the show. You give us a call at 1-888-312-5757. That's 1-888-312-5757. People, before we get to the stories I had planned for the Seattle Way, a little geography for you. The fastest way to get here from China by air is not across the Pacific. You can go over the poles, too. You can do that kind of stuff, guys. Just look into it. This balloon came over the pole. A whole bunch of you on the text line are saying, why didn't we shoot down when it went over Seattle? Guys, it never went over Seattle. According to the information the government has given us, well, first of all, I haven't seen it up in the sky, but it's been very cloudy recently. But number two, it came from over the pole. So just look at that for a second. It went to see Santa first. It did that. It figured it would blend in behind him on the NORAD radar, right? It would just sneak in behind him because they're so busy tracking that. Didn't go to Seattle, as far as we know. Meanwhile, according to King 5, a man is in custody after police said he barricaded himself inside a house in Seattle's Wallingford neighborhood. The Seattle Police Department was called just before midnight when homeowners said they were locked out of their own home. The homeowners told police they were in the front yard because they thought a raccoon was nesting. The suspect found an opening, got inside the house, and locked the homeowners out. Quote, we're minding our own business, having a nice quiet evening at home around 11. And that question came between us of, were the raccoons getting into some stuff in our front yard? They said they didn't want to be named. They wanted to be anonymous because you know what happens on Nextdoor, the social media site, if you start talking about people breaking into your house. He was just a target of opportunity to get into our house. At 11 o'clock at night, you assume people are home. That's how brazen or drugged out these people are. A SWAT team surrounded the house and a police standoff began. Police tried using flashbangs, placing a robot inside to monitor the suspect. And they were armed with shields at the front door. The standoff lasted for over 4 hours until SWAT finally grabbed the suspect. Quote, what I understand, they finally found him in our bed, said the homeowners, in our bed. Having a nice midwinter nap. So I think the worst part is we're just going to have to deal with the mess in our house. He trashed stuff in there. He's banging on the door with something, breaking glass. We hadn't even gone in. We're just bracing ourselves with that. There were no injuries. And Jay Inslee wants to take away your gun. Jay Inslee wants to take away your right to protect yourself. Bob Ferguson wants to do that. The Washington State Democrats want to do that. And you have stories like this. By the way, the people who vote for Democrats, they were very, very active on social media about the story. One of our amazing listeners sent us this tip. They said, go check out the online forums, the social media forums about this, and look at the comments. How dare you bring SWAT team into our neighborhood? How dare you use the police around here? There's a guy in their bed. There's a dude in their bed at 11 o'clock at night. What'd you want them to do? Say, oh, why don't you just take the guest room instead? Or better yet, we'll take the guest room. You keep our bed. Hey, any of you activists that are mad at this poor couple, got an idea for you. Why don't you offer to have the guy at your house? By the way, odds are this couple probably are the ones who voted for all this insanity. Meanwhile, more craziness. This according to Cairo 7. Cold winter nights in Western Washington have some people doing whatever they can to stay warm. Oh, it's our poor, unsheltered neighbors, right? One of the owners of Bad Jimmy's Brewing Company in Ballard said what appeared to be a warming fire almost cost him his business. No, it's a drug addict fire. Can we call it like it is? Oh, it's a warming fire. They're just trying to stay warm. There are shelters. There are religious ones. There are secular ones. There are shelters all over. Stop giving me this. There's no place available. There are shelters. And there's special cold weather shelter set up. Jason Shrum, one of the brewery's co-owners, said the fire was caught on surveillance and could have been much worse. Quote, a person had entered from over in that direction, had walked into here, set up shop in our beer garden, and lit it on fire. It looked like they piled it up on the table, then lit it ablaze, whether it was a lighter or whatever, but it started a big fire. He's still shocked that his business is standing because he estimated the flames were about 4 feet high. Quote, had it gotten any higher and actually lit one of these tents on fire, not only our place, but neighboring places, could have been damaged as well. I remember 3-4 years ago, a neighbor of mine in Georgetown, a business neighbor, called me over and said, you got to see this. So I knew that an RV had exploded, spontaneously combusted, I'm sure. And they called me over to see their building. The window frames had melted from the heat. The blinds had melted from the heat. It could have destroyed their business because of the oh-so-tolerant, the oh-so-compassionate activist class that enables this nonsense to continue. The fire started around 3:30 a.m. Sunday morning. Hours later, C.J. Dougherty, the taproom manager, walked in to find a mess. "So I come around the corner," he said. "It's a big mound of ash underneath the table that's completely scorched, and then debris kind of along around the back wall and some torn up mesh where the embers went." "Oh, don't worry. Don't worry, sir. I know you almost lost your business and you lost some stuff from your business. Don't worry. The city of Seattle has a fund you can apply to. I think you get $1,000 to fix up whatever damage there was from a fire." "Oh, no, you know what? Just put it on your insurance, sir. Right? That's what it's there for. Just put it on your insurance. Never mind the fact that your insurance rates are going to go up." Luckily, the damage was minimal. "This has been what's kept us alive, and knowing it was just a few embers away from being completely gone, it was a bit upsetting." Shrum said he believed the person was trying to keep warm, but he said, "What has happened is not okay. I try to be on the side of compassion, but, you know, sometimes it's difficult when especially you come in and your place has been lit on fire. I don't want to criticize this business owner. I know what they're going through. They have a public business. They're now in the news. They want people to come by, and they feel like they have to say the line, like the people with the COVID vaccine. Well, I'm glad I was boosting or whatever. I try to stay on the side of compassion." No. You have to start saying, "Everybody, God forbid this happens to your house or your business, and unfortunately it's going to happen sooner rather than later. If you are in the media, you have to say, I tried being compassionate. I tried being tolerant, and it's harming me. At what point does my life matter? At what point does my business matter? At what point does my livelihood matter? And at what point do you say we've had enough of tolerating this lawlessness? Had enough of tolerating this crime? You say, we tried your way. It has failed. Give me another direction. That's what you got to do, because this is just insane already. Story after story. Every story I have about Seattle today is something like this. And it's not because there's nothing else to talk about. This is all there is to talk about. It's like New York in the 1980s. One of the people who works here sent me a picture on their way home yesterday. They're on the light rail. There's pee on the floor of the light rail. Pee on the floor. And you go, well, it's mass transit, Ari, of course. No! You should be expecting it to be clean. You should be expecting it to be nice. There was money in the middle of that little pool of urine. Nobody was picking that up, I guarantee you that. Oh, I'm sure it was left by somebody's dog, right? Not one of our unsheltered neighbors who also gave the light rail bed bugs. How much longer are people going to tolerate this? You got Seattle City Council elections coming up. Where are the common sense candidates who are going to run and say, I'm running against you. I'm running against your record because look what you've done to our once beautiful city. And if you've had enough of it around here and you feel like you need to get out for a little while, don't forget, on October 31st for 10 days, I'm taking a whole bunch of our listeners to Israel. Yep, you get to hang out with me for 10 days in Israel. We're going to stay in the best accommodations. We're going to be driven around in coach bus. We are going to eat at the best places. We're going to go to wineries. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have a great, great time. We're going to experience the ancient land of Israel, visits the Roman capital of Caesarea, marvel at the views of Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives, walk in the footsteps of millions before in the old city of Jerusalem. We're going to go to the Mediterranean coastal city of Tel Aviv. Check out the nightlife a little bit there. Historic Nazareth, Tiberias, plus 4 nights in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ascend the cliffs of Masada, float in the Dead Sea. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to do it with our friends over at Colette Tours, who make travel easy, from handling flights to meals, hotels, local experiences. Your only job is to have the time of your life. And I'll tell you something, people, I know over the weekend is when you look at this kind of stuff and go, I want all the details because I don't have to worry about work. This is a trip that's available to everybody across the country. And we got a lot of people who stream the show, got a lot of people listen to the show, and space is limited. So make sure you sign up now. Meet me and the folks from Colette at a virtual meeting to learn more February 21st at 6 p.m. Don't miss your chance to join me in Israel. Call Colette at 844-268-4192 or visit kvi.com for the virtual meeting details. Again, that number is 844-268-4192. When we come back, we're going to tell you why almost 100 Democrats in the House of Representatives refuse to condemn socialism. We'll have that for you, plus a whole lot more. You're listening to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI. 86 House Democrats opposed a resolution condemning the horrors of socialism yesterday in Congress. Now, I know that everybody was so preoccupied with what was going on with Ilhan Omar and the unhinged speeches given by all the Democrats defending her being a Jew hater. But according to the Washington Examiner, the 86 no votes mostly hail from the progressive wing of the party and include the squad members AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, as well as our very, very own Pramila Jayapal. Despite calling the resolution a waste of time earlier Thursday, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries joined with 108 other Democrats and all present Republicans to support it. Additionally, 14 Democrats just voted present. Charming. Now we know who doesn't take a side and things like this. So I just want to make sure I got this right. You guys are cool with what happened in Venezuela? You guys are cool with what happened in Cuba? You guys are cool with what happened in all these countries that are absolute failures? Oh, I know. Socialism just hasn't been tried right yet. Or maybe it's because the people at the top always make all the money, right? Like Maxine Waters, who's insisting she's not a socialist. She got all really mad on Tuesday when Chip Roy confronted her about past statements she had made threatening to nationalize the oil industry, right? Because it's the elites, it's the specials at the top who don't suffer under socialism. They get all the money from the rest of us. But meanwhile, you've got these 87 Democrats, these 86 Democrats, excuse me, and 14 who voted present. Here's Hakeem Jeffries earlier in the day giving a reason why we shouldn't be supporting this.
They're bringing to the floor of the House of Representatives today a resolution on socialism to condemn some dictators that we all condemn. But understand, the goal of this phony, fake, and fraudulent resolution is just to somehow provide cover for extreme MAGA Republicans to try to undermine an agenda that is designed to lift up the health, safety, and well-being of the American people.
Wait, hang on a second. You voted for it. You voted to condemn the horrors of socialism. So why are you saying that? Guys, this is politics. You know what happens? He goes to people like AOC, he goes to people like Ilhan Omar, and he says, guys, I'm going to vote for this thing because it doesn't mean anything anyway. But when I have a microphone and I have cameras pointed at me, I'm going to say this. So please don't be mad at me. And they go, yeah, good. That's fine. Because who's going to remember this vote? It's not like we got real problems around here. You know, the fact that inflation is so out of control. Oh, it's getting better, right? I can't tell by the price of eggs. Seems like it's only getting worse. We got a spy balloon flying over the country. And Joe Biden, the generals aren't doing anything about it. Nothing at all. Things are only getting worse. Walmart CEO Bill Simon is joining, or excuse me, he joined Fox Friends to warn Americans of how bad these layoffs could be for the U.S. economy. So he said, quote, it's crazy right now. We're stuck in this loop of wage inflation, product inflation, cost inflation. And it's just that the cycle keeps going. And I think, unfortunately, an inevitable byproduct of some of the Fed's moves as a necessary medicine we have seen to take to kind of cool things down and get inflation back under control on some of these layoffs that are coming. Although the labor market remains healthy and one of the few bright spots in the economy, there are signs that's beginning to soften. In addition to a number of high-profile tech layoffs over the past month, the economy added 223,000 jobs in December, the smallest gain in 2 years. The Federal Reserve officials have said that they expect unemployment to climb as a result of their aggressive interest rate hike campaign. That's what always happens, guys. Because when companies don't have enough money to spend because it's more expensive to borrow money, they don't hire as many people. They don't expand. In fact, they use the opportunity to cut the dead weight. Have you noticed all these corporations are cutting around 6, 7, 8% of their workforce? That offsets the point increases in inflation. It's basic business. What's going on here? It's basic business. Tell you something else here, guys. Democratic Senator Patty Murray used to be in favor of negotiating on things like the debt ceiling. This is her just a few years ago. This is back in 2011, when now the Democrats don't want to go negotiate it on it. Excuse me, they don't want to negotiate it on it at all.
But we understand that compromise is important, so it doesn't increase revenues. And that appears to be something my Republican colleagues have almost single-mindedly focused on through this process. So we have given on that. It puts our country on a more sustainable fiscal track, and it allows us to continue, importantly, to work to reduce the debt and deficit without the threat of economic calamity hanging over our heads like the current House proposal does. Mr. President, on this side, Democrats have bent over backwards to get this done. We compromised again and then again. And the bill that was introduced last night on our side is the fruit of many compromises. We did this not because we think this is the ideal way to tackle this issue. Democrats do want a larger and a more balanced package that we believe will address our problems in a responsible way for years to come. But we put this forward because we know the American people today want results, not rhetoric. And we know the consequences of inaction are far too high. So, Mr. President, I call on our Republican colleagues to support this legislation. Stop playing politics with the American economy and work with us to solve this problem for the American people.
Wait a second. The Democrats sure used to sound like they were interested in finding a solution, a compromise to this kind of stuff. This is Democrat Senator Jeanine Shaheen back in 2011.
We also know that finding a compromise on the debt limit is critical if we want to avoid plunging our economy back into chaos. And we know that many of these tax breaks just don't make sense. So I urge my colleagues, let's look at the facts. Let's work together for what we all know needs to happen. Reduce the deficit, raise the debt limit, and keep America working.
Yeah, and now you got Karine Jean-Pierre saying something a little bit different.
Thanks, Karine. I'm trying to address some market-related chatter as well as some of the beliefs of some members on Capitol Hill. Jay Powell was just asked about the debt ceiling. He said there's only one option here. It's for Congress to pass the increase. Is that the view of the White House? There is only one option. There are no prioritization off-ramps, comically large coins to consider. That Congress is the only option here in the view of the White House.
So on any of the coins and mint coins, I know that's come up before. You know, that's something that the Treasury deals with and answers on, so I'm not going to comment there. I think we've been very clear. I think we've been very clear from here that this should be done without conditions. And it is their basic job, Congress, right? It is their basic duty to lift the debt ceiling. It is something that has been consistently done over the years. And that's how we see it. We see it as is something that should not be done without with conditions. It should be done without conditions, to be even clearer. And again, it is their constitutional obligation to get this done for on behalf of the American people.
Constitutional obligation to get this done. My, oh my, how they have changed their tone, how they have changed course. By the way, it's now been revealed that Hunter Biden's business partner helped move 1,850 boxes of documents from Joe Biden's vice president office in 2012. Guys, at this point, we got the Chinese spy balloon. We know that Joe Biden's in bed with China. We know that Hunter Biden's in bed with the rest of the world. At what point do you say this corruption has gone far enough? At what point do you say enough is enough? It is compromising our national security. You have sold out this country to foreign governments. You have sold out this country to foreign agents. And we need to draw a line because this is nuts already. How much more are we going to find out? This is just the tip of the iceberg. Imagine if the rest of the media was actually doing their job and digging into all this. Because who knows what else we'd find out? And at what point do we say media bears some responsibility for the fact that they never called this out originally? For the fact that they just wanted Democrats so bad, they let this go on and on and on and on and kept making excuses for Hunter Biden. Like, oh, he's just a wayward child. Oh, you know, the 52-year-old wayward child. Give me a break. Remember this week when everybody in the media and everybody in the Democrat Party was trying to make the Tyre Nichols death about race somehow, and Vice President Kamala Harris went flying down to the funeral, and you had Al Sharpton there talking about race? Well, according to Newsweek, hang on, going into my little black book of the right-wing media conspiracy, let's see, I got Newsmax. I don't have Newsweek in here. The Memphis Police Department is investigating a connection between Tyre Nichols and the ex-girlfriend slash ex-wife of one of the Memphis officers who's been charged in Nichols' death. Now, right when this whole thing came to light, there were a whole bunch of things on social media about this. We didn't know if they were reliable or not, so we didn't report on them. But now the Shelby County District Attorney's Office told Newsweek that the potential connection between Nichols and a former romantic partner of Demetrius Haley, one of the former officers, is still under investigation. So what you're telling me is that this whole thing might have actually been about a lover's spat or a love triangle or getting revenge for something like that, it's being investigated. The outlet also inquired if Haley sent photos of Nichols to his ex-wife following his violent arrest. Oh, this was targeted, intentional, revenge, you name it in theory. But we had Vice President Kamala Harris there. We had Al Sharpton there. By the way, has Al Sharpton ever been right on one of these things? Ever? No, he's always wrong. Remember the Duke LaCrosse case? Spokesperson for the Shelby County District Attorney's Office told Newsweek, all of those things, along with participation of others that are now the subject of our investigation. Director of Communications for Shelby County District Attorney's Office, Erica Williams, told the outlet that the rumors have not been confirmed. Williams said, we know there have been questions about other officers and fire department personnel on the scene, persons remotely operating cameras, the potential false reporting, among other things. We are now at the stage of our investigation where we are looking into all of those matters. She added that at this time, none of those accusations are confirmed. However, nothing is off the table, and it's still a very active investigation, still early in the investigation. Last week, five former Memphis police officers were charged in the death of Nichols. Nichols died from injuries sustained during a beating during a January 7th traffic stop for reckless driving. Oh, by the way, now here in Washington, they're talking about banning traffic stops for things like expired tabs and broken taillights. Aside from the fact that's how you catch a whole bunch of criminals is that kind of stuff. Mike, this is great news for me. I don't renew my car tab. So guess what? Car tabs just got free. Hey, Sound Transit's in for a huge, huge budget reduction if they actually pass this thing. Why? Because why would anybody pay for their car tabs ever, ever again? If they can't pull you over for them, why would you pay any of those tickets? Say, nope, sorry, not doing it. It's a lot easier than what I do where I identify as homeless or something like that. We go to the KVI studio line, take a call from Matthew in Bremerton. Matthew, what's up?
Hi, I had a thought about the whole balloons and excessive number of documents that were found.
Do you think there are documents inside the balloon, Matthew?
No, but the documents that have been found.
Okay.
So if our president really is as deep in with the Chinese as it appears he might be, I'm wondering why would he be so against guns? And the only thing that I can come up with is the Chinese want him to get rid of the guns because that's the only thing they can't control for our ability to defend ourselves in the middle. If they intercept the military and start controlling it.
Do you mean like in that awful, awful, awful reboot of Red Dawn when we got invaded in Seattle, Washington? Is that what you're worried about?
No, no, I'm not worried about it. I'm just thinking, as Americans, our greatest defense is not the military, it's the ability to protect ourselves, having bare arms, that sort of thing. But the thing that's funny is when people interpret instead of understanding the Constitution, they think that having and bearing arms means that you can only keep them and walk around with them, but bearing arms actually means you can use them.
Well, I'd say we have different local laws that apply to that about when you can use them, when you can't use them. So I would consult your local attorney before using them on anybody, sir. But I do appreciate the call. Appreciate you being part of the show. I mean, think about this for a second, guys. Whatever's going on with this balloon, it's a little crazy how secretive they are of it. That only creates more fear. If they're open about it and the truth is so bad, I'm a little concerned what's so bad that they feel like they can't tell us. That's something else we're thinking about. You know, in the 1950s when Sputnik was up there, people were like, they're spying on us. It's going to blow us up. It's going to drop nukes. And that inspired people for the space race, inspired America to actually do something with that fear, channel it into the space race, right? What's going on right now? We're all like, is the government lying to us? We assume the government's lying to us. Is Joe Biden up to the challenge? What's China's actual motivation here? Can we stand up to China? Can we fight back against China? What if we actually get dragged into World War III? Hey, where are those fools with the doomsday clock right now? Where are those guys doing an unveiling of their giant cardboard cutout that took weeks to make and weeks to unveil? You don't get that from an overnight print shop, guys. Where are the guys with the doomsday clock right now? This is like Cuban Missile Crisis type stuff. You got a foreign hostile government's spy asset flying over the United States. And our government seems powerless to do anything about it. Completely powerless. I don't feel safer. I feel more exposed. And the question is, when are the independents, when are the Democrats going to wake up and say, we can't trust these people to run a banana stand? There's always money in the banana stand. Time for a story you're not going to get anywhere else.
Talk Radio 570 KVI, an Ari Hoffman Show exclusive.
Speaking of journalists that are being targeted by politicians, Jonathan Cho from the Discovery Institute and I decide to partner up on a story. Here's what happened. You might remember a few weeks ago, we found out here on the Ari Hoffman Show that they were going to be using a hotel in Federal Way called the Stevenson to house the homeless, to house the drug addicts, to house the felons, to house whoever, and they hadn't informed the neighborhood. Now, that's not really news except for to the neighbors. Apparently, King County's been planning this a long time. Apparently, they were going to be doing a lot of stuff with state money. But it's not news either that they weren't telling the neighbors, because they've done this on how many occasions already? But Jonathan Cho got a little curious from our reporting here, and he started investigating. Wait a minute. They have the Red Lion Hotel in Federal Way right nearby. Why do they need the Stevenson if the Federal Way Red Lion isn't open to become an addict shelter? I'm sorry, a drug shelter. No, I'm sorry, a homeless shelter yet. So he got a little curious, and he did some digging. And guess what he found out?
The former Red Lion Hotel is conveniently located off Interstate 5. It's easy access to stores and public transportation. That's one of the reasons why King County bought the place for almost $9 million to house the homeless. Problem is, after nearly 2 years, it's still not open.
No, they didn't tell us a thing. We have no idea.
Even city council members say they don't know why.
And then they're not telling us why? There's problems with that.
In a joint investigation with KVI Radio's Ari Hoffman, we started asking questions.
Well, they're hiding, obviously. They're hiding what they're doing.
Initially, King County spokesperson Chase Gallagher said he's declining to participate in the story. That is until we discovered an internal email chain saying the opening of the homeless hotel is delayed because the rooms are contaminated with high levels of methamphetamine. It's unclear exactly how much of this toxic drug was found on the grounds or how it got there, but the levels were dangerous enough to trigger a warning from King County officials, instructing local firefighters to proceed with caution if they have to enter.
Can they go about remediation or repair, or is the building a complete loss?
Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell says he's disappointed with King County for leaving them in the dark.
The first I'd ever heard about that notification of South County Fire is from you, and so it would have been nice to have received that information.
That's because Farrell says this delay has had a ripple effect.
We were really relying and hoping that would get online, especially as it got cold.
Aside from the homeless unable to get off the streets, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and Catholic Community Services are now trying to convert the Stevenson Motel into a temporary shelter until the meth is cleaned up at the former Red Lion.
And at least the businesses should have known about it earlier.
But every business next door is opposed to the plan.
I don't believe that it's something that will help the community.
Sandy Shim works for the strip mall's landlord and says most of these shops and restaurants are Korean immigrant owned.
She didn't know about it.
She's been translating the bad news for her tenants. Pastor Charles Mwangi leads the African church in this strip mall and is also concerned the motel will attract drug use and crime if the homeless move in next door.
We are concerned because we have vulnerable people here.
And wonders if King County is considering the children in his Sunday school.
I know there might be a possibility of maybe having even sex offenders.
So he's also signed the petition with hundreds of signatures and is planning to possibly protest.
South King County is basically the dumpster for Seattle.
Meanwhile, City Council member Erica Norton says King County is holding them hostage because even if Federal Way rejected the permit application, the city would lose grant funding.
I'm willing to say no, this isn't okay.
But bottom line, Washington state law says the county ultimately has final say on turning properties into homeless motels and is not required to ask communities for permission.
Then why do they need the public participation?
In downtown Seattle.
Which is why King County Executive Dow Constantine's been on a motel buying spree across the region.
They've done this to other cities too.
Farrell says he plans on presenting all public input to the county. And if people are caught using drugs on site, the city still can pull the license to operate.
We're put in a position that is really unfair to us.
Regardless, Deputy Mayor Susan Honda says this should be a wake-up call for Federal Way and other cities in the state.
Cities need local control. We know what works best for our city, better than someone in Olympia or someone in Seattle.
As for the county, we brought these findings and community concerns back to Gallagher. He finally acknowledged the meth inside the former Red Lion and says the county spent more than $500,000 to clean up the mess, but still won't say when it will officially open or even if it can be salvaged.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you something absolutely nuts that just happened while that segment was playing. As I said at the beginning of all this, Jonathan Cho and I have been working on the story together, but people at King County Regional Homeless Authority didn't know that we were. So when we're asking them for comment, we're getting different responses. On top of that, we sent this story to a few of our friends in local media who started reaching out to King County, and they got different responses. So let me go through everything we've heard so far from King County, from Chase Gallagher, from Dow Constantine's office. One, there's no meth. I don't know what you're talking about. It's just a small amount of meth. Lots of buildings have meth in them. It's a trace amount. It's just a little tiny amount. And all these buildings that are low occupancy, high usage, it's normal. We've also heard, well, no, it wasn't the meth that delayed this place from opening. A water main broke in the winter, and that took a while. I'm calling BS on these as they go, by the way, okay? Because here's the other thing. King County sent me an inspection report on the building that they allegedly got before they spent $9 million on it. And when they got this report, I don't see any traces of meth in here. Was the inspection company lying? Were they told to cover it up? Was it not there beforehand? Were they letting people stay in this building and they brought the meth? Who knows? We don't know where the meth came from. But when you have the fire department being told that they can't go in the building because it's hazardous, because there's high concentrations of meth, then you got a problem. Now we're being told, this is even crazier, here we go. King County purchased the Red Lion in Federal Way. Unfortunately, during meth remediation, some damage was done to the building. Whoa, wait a second. So now the meth is there, and some damage was done to the building, which has led to litigation between King County and their contractor. The hotel is unusable until litigation is concluded. So now they're leasing out the Stevenson, which has 23 rooms, to make up for the Red Lion. They are navigating the permitting environment and expecting political pushback. They will be sending us a proposed budget. They may also be requesting financial assistance from King County. So hang on. That's three excuses I've heard so far. All of them conflict with each other. And then there's something else that Jonathan Cho found out today from talking to the Federal Way City Council members. Apparently, the light rail's supposed to be going through this property down the road. If that is true, they're going to be tearing down this building anyway, which they spent $9 million of your taxpayer dollars on, which they have botched from start to finish. So let me make sure I got this right. Federal Way Mayor had no idea this is why there was a delay at the Red Lion. Federal Way City Council had no idea this is why there was a delay at the Red Lion. And now, because Jonathan Cho and I started digging, we have now found out this whole web of lies, this whole absolute mess, and oh my God, just oh my God, they can't say anything truthful. And now Chase Gallagher is getting caught in his web of lies and blaming everybody else. Yes, I hear what you've said about me. It's gone back to me. If you tell the truth, you never have to remember your lie, right? Let's just be real about this for a second. So now, is this the most complicated web of lies they've ever told about one of these homeless shelters? Yep. And here's the crazy thing. If Federal Way doesn't give them the operating permits for these shelters, for these rehab facilities, for whatever they're being used for, then King County can have their funding pulled from the county. Can have their funding pulled from the state. One of the reasons they don't have to tell you when one of these things is going into your backyard is they have the legal authority to do that. And they don't have to tell you. This whole model is completely flawed. But you know what I know for sure? Next week, there's a community meeting with elected officials. And from what I hear, the county is supposed to be there. I will make sure to get you the details of that. And Sunday night, Jonathan Cho and I will have more updates for you on this tangled web of insanity and government incompetency. Oh, my God. God. Sometimes you just can't believe people are so incompetent, but then you're like, oh, right, they work for the government. I gotta say, California is just descending into like Mad Max world, post-apocalyptic craziness. According to Fox News, a group of thieves were caught on security video breaking into a California home, with one suspect ringing a doorbell as they fled with thousands of dollars worth of stolen items. The burglars were captured on camera around 7:25 p.m. Tuesday at a home in the San Francisco suburb of Danville. Wait a minute. Wasn't Gavin Newsom mayor of San Francisco for a hot minute? And wasn't he the guy who said, oh, we're going to stop homelessness and we're going to stop crime, and it all got worse? These thieves were seen scouting the backyard when one of them fell into a small pond. Knowing California, he could probably sue for that. He could probably sue and probably win. You had an unmarked water hazard in your back. You didn't put a fence around it. Another video from a different part of the home shows the group fleeing out the front door. One suspect is heard telling his partners to come on, come on, come on before pressing the doorbell. They made off with cash, jewelry, sunglasses, and bags worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. I do love how they mentioned the sunglasses. Here in the Pacific Northwest, where we sell more sunglasses per capita than I think anywhere else in the U.S., perhaps the world, we don't really care about our sunglasses because if you're smart, you're buying your sunglasses at the airport or at the gas station. But in California, oh, those Ray-Bans, you need the Croakleys. I mean, the Oakleys. You got to have those suckers. Quote, it was dark. They surveyed the house from the backyard to see if anyone was home before breaking the slider. The home was empty at the time of the burglary. The victim said the intruders rushed out the front door and rang the doorbell to apparently say, we got you. Because you know what happens when they ring the doorbell? It starts recording. The thieves fled in a BMW X5. I just feel like they're pretty brazen to go in not knowing if people are home or not. And I feel like it's a dangerous situation. On Thursday, the Danville Police Department said they were still looking for the suspects. They did not release any other information. Given that this is a suburb of San Francisco, I'm going to assume that this is a fairly regular occurrence, because the way it works is the criminals go to the nice neighborhoods nearby and then break in. But basically, they're saying, these people, we don't care where you are in the world. We know you're not home. We don't care if you were home. We're breaking in and we're stealing your stuff. And here we're going to leave you a video message as a blank you. Charming. Another story. From our friends over at Fox, a Southern California doctor was killed Wednesday during a violent encounter in which he was hit from behind by a vehicle while cycling and then stabbed by the driver. Dr. Michael Mamone, 58, was riding a bicycle on the Pacific Coast Highway in Dana Point when a Lexus struck him from behind. Is it just me or most Lexus drivers, you know what? Around 3 p.m., according to the Orange County Sheriff's Department. The driver of the car, identified as Van Roy Evans Smith of Long Beach, struck Mamone and then got out of the vehicle and attacked him with a knife. Holy God. When deputies arrived, they found Mamone lying in an intersection with severe injuries. Witnesses said the suspect struck the bicyclist and proceeded to stab the victim at least once in the back. The suspect then allegedly pulled out a gun and fired multiple rounds before he was disarmed by two passerbys. This is like Austin Powers. You press the button on the chair, the guy falls into the fire pit. I'm still alive. I'm just very, very badly burned. Then they come in and they shoot the guy. Oh, no, you shot me right in the leg. I mean, this is real life, though. Smith was detained by bystanders until authorities arrived. He was arrested on suspicion of murder, the sheriff's department said. He is slated to appear in court Friday, according to jail records. A knife believed to have been used in the attack was found at the scene. Did this guy feel like taking this guy out for a personal reason, or was it like Death Race, where it's like you get 100 points for a guy on a bicycle? Is it something targeted, something personal? Is this person on drugs? What's going on here? Investigators say there was no known connection between Smith and Mamone. Mamone was a doctor at the Providence Mission Hospital in Laguna Beach, where he practiced emergency medicine. Quote, we are stunned by this devastating tragedy, said the hospital. The entire Mission Hospital family is grieving over the loss of an incredible physician and friend. We will honor Dr. Mamone's dedication to our community and passion for medicine by continuing to provide exceptional care. That's just absolutely horrifying. And meanwhile, is anybody going to be held responsible for any of these crimes? California District Attorney unloaded on Governor Gavin Newsom on Friday as state officials remain locked in a war of words over the death of a police officer allegedly gunned down by a released convict while on duty. Hey, Washington State, haven't we heard this story before? According to Fox, Fresno County District Attorney Lisa Smitkamp had squarely blamed liberal leaders' criminal justice reforms for the tragedy, saying Newsom has blood on his hands. Newsom, in a heated response, pointed the finger at Smitkamp's prosecutorial discretion in the case. Gonzalo Carrasco Jr., a 24-year-old officer with the Selma Police Department, was allegedly gunned down by a released convict on the job on Tuesday. Authorities have identified the suspect as 23-year-old Nathaniel Dixon and said he was out on probation as part of California's AB 109 law. Well, who signed that law? That's Gavin Newsom. And as much as I love to blame prosecutors, prosecutors are handcuffed, even though the criminals aren't, by a lot of these laws and what they can and cannot do, as are judges. Dixon was sentenced to over 5 years in prison in March 2022 for charges related to robbery, weapons, and drugs, but was released in August after only serving 5 months. The Dixon case was handled in an appropriate manner, Smitkamp told Fox and Friends. He was exposed to 6 years, 8 months. He pled to charges that exposed him to 5 years and 4 months. This is just Gavin Newsom doing what he does best, which is shifting the blame, creating a soundbite for himself because he knows deep in his heart that his policies are failing. He's a menace to public safety in the state of California. I must reach out to this prosecutor. This person speaks my language. Smitkamp said Dixon was charged with every crime that we know he committed and would have served 80% of his sentence before the state's introduction of Proposition 57, which allows parole consideration for nonviolent felons based on credits for rehabilitation, good behavior, and education. What about the Menendez brothers? They're very educated. They went to the Ivy League, so they don't go to jail for murder after offing their parents. Oh, wait, they didn't go to jail for murder after offing their parents. When criminals get to Gavin Newsom's Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, he's arbitrarily giving them bonus credits. It's really Proposition 57, these failed statewide measures that Gavin Newsom has supported. They're giving these inmates get-out-of-jail-free cards. Newsom was asked to respond to Smitkamp's previous statements during a scheduled press conference Wednesday on gun reform, where he pointed the finger back at the DA. Quote, she should blame herself. I've been listening to this for years from her. She has the prosecutorial discretion. No, she doesn't. You signed the law that says she doesn't. So, no, this is you, Newsom. He says, with all due respect to her statement, she should be ashamed of herself and she should look in the mirror. Why is he saying this? Because somebody wants to run for president. And if you remember the Swift Boats vets that came out against John Kerry, you know what's going to happen with Gavin Newsom? All the victims of this. If they want to destroy Gavin Newsom's chances of getting elected, you bring out all the victims of this. He will never get elected ever, ever, ever again, except in California.
Sometimes you think to yourself, you know what? Maybe I'm the crazy one. And maybe, you know, I'm just, you know, being a little obnoxious, or maybe it's just the way I'm behaving with elected officials that they don't want to talk to me, or they don't want to go on record for a story I'm having. And then you find out, no, it's not just you. It's pretty much everybody in town who challenges a narrative. Joining me now on the KVI studio line from the Undivided Podcast, the one and only beautiful and talented Brandi Cruz. Thank you so much for being with us today.
A couple things. First of all, you are crazy. So those things aren't mutually exclusive. You are a little annoying, but you also called me beautiful. And unlike most women in this day and age, I accept compliments and I love getting them. So thank you.
I do love the sheer honesty you always have, which is how you know you're always going to get that from the Undivided Podcast. So, Brandi, you had an article out. I got to ask, the first question I have is, mainly recently, you've been more of a commentator. What inspired you to write this article about how elected officials are dodging journalists?
Yeah, in the past couple of weeks, I've been trying to get back a little more to my roots of investigative journalism and try to beef that up more. So that is intentional. You know, I've been doing a lot of mostly commentary since I left Fox 13, which serves an important purpose in what I'm trying to accomplish with the podcast. But starting in 2023, I'm making a concerted effort to do more of both. So this is part of that. But, you know, the genesis for this story in particular was really the treatment of Jonathan Cho very publicly. A couple of the videos that came out of, in one case, him being blocked physically from attending a press tour of a homelessness shelter. And so that's what prompted me to say, because I was very personally perturbed by it, but also professionally. And so that's what launched me in the fall. I believe I put in public disclosure requests in October to try to get to the bottom of what behind the scenes was dictating the behavior we saw play out on video.
Gotcha. So when you did your public disclosure request, did you look for emails about yourself? Did you look for emails about anybody else in the industry, or was it mainly focused just on Jonathan Cho?
I should file a PDR for my name. I can't imagine what would come up. No, it was for any emails, text messages, et cetera, mentioning Jonathan Cho or the Discovery Institute. There might have been a couple other elements, but it wasn't anyone else by name, I don't believe.
Gotcha. Just because I'm reading this whole thing and there's a clear effort to stop him from reporting anything, but it wasn't just him. It wasn't just the Discovery Institute. They were also discussing our friends over at the Washington Policy Center. Now, the thing that's fascinating about that is I know that Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center is oftentimes invited to participate in things with the Democrats, in things with the governor's office. And here they are saying they need some policy to deal with them, as if they're Ari Hoffman or Jonathan Cho. And that's a little bit more mind-boggling to me, because the Washington Policy Center, say what you will about them, they always have the data, they always have the facts, it's always well-researched, they may lean right, but they always have the answers correct. Somebody may not like their spin, but you can't fault their research.
Yeah, and you know, here's what really interested me too as I dug into this. I've been a journalist in Seattle for 12 years. And when I moved to Seattle in 2011, we had a robust independent media landscape. We always have. And I think it's one of the unique things about Seattle. It was sort of ahead of its time in that regard. But when I first came here, all of those independent outlets, publications, commentary, they were all progressive. They were all filling some sort of niche and covering issues from a progressive perspective. And there was never an issue with it. Until in the last year, more options that are at least more fair to conservatives have popped up to fill this really important void and provide a critical counterpoint to the prevailing narrative. And only now, only with the rise of more prominent conservative voices like yourself, more prominent conservative independent outlets, is it suddenly a problem with these elected officials that, hey, now we need a policy to figure out how do we respond to these outlets that aren't mainstream outlets, when for at least a decade, it hasn't been an issue. And so you bring up an email, because although I did only request emails relating to Jonathan Cho, obviously some other things were in the mix. And there was this email between the governor's deputy communications director, Mike Falk, and the lead communications director, Jamie Smith, where Mike Falk is saying, I think we need to nail down a policy for how we respond to the Washington Policy Center and others like Cho or Cruz or the Center Square. And I'm thinking to myself when I saw that email, because the Center Square is like, people think it's conservative, but it's a very fair sort of AP style news publication. They do great work, solid work. And I thought the dozens, if not hundreds of independent outlets in the state, many of which have a stated political bias or outside funding from left organizations. And the four that he mentions are four that are harder on Democrats: WPC, Jonathan Cho, me, and Center Square. And that's when I was like, okay, this isn't just us thinking this is happening. This is definitely happening.
We're talking with the lovely and talented Brandi Cruz from the Undivided podcast about her recent expose, talking about how elected officials are trying as hard as possible to dodge any journalist, any reporter, anybody for that matter, who questions the official narrative. And I can't help but thinking, these guys have no problem giving interviews to people like Erica Barnett, who's been proven wrong time and time again. I believe she actually got fired and sued because of one of those things. I remember she got fired because she was wrong, but I remember some mess with The Atlantic with the Ron and Don show.
Yeah, she got sued, yeah, right, for stating falsehoods about two radio hosts.
Exactly. I remember that fun. And then you've got the stranger out here. I know most of them have no problem whatsoever going and talking to the stranger. And yet it just seems like in our media, you would know more about this than I would, because I'm relatively new to the game. But I look around and I will send tips to certain news outlets and they're like, wish we had the staff to pursue it. We can't. Or I hear about people leaving different outlets because they say they won't let me pursue these stories anymore. And it seems like the investigative journalism isn't there except for the people you mentioned. And I know you, Brandi. Brandi, I will say this in front of my entire audience. There are very few podcasts I listen to. Yours is one of them.
Oh, thank you.
Because there's, well, there, you're going to, this is a double-sided compliment here, okay? Because there's so many times I'm like, yep, completely agree. And so many times I go, not so sure about that. And that's what I love about it, is that we're still friends. We can still have that conversation. You are not a Republican. You are definitely not a conservative. I know Jonathan Cho very well. He is definitely a Democrat, and he's being thrown to the right by these guys, by the way they keep freezing him out. And yet they're treating us all like you all work for 570 KVI on the Ari Hoffman Show.
Well, and what's interesting, though, it's so odd because, for instance, as I was gearing up to put this story out, I got this email from the governor's communications director offering me an interview with the governor in my other capacity as a fill-in host for the radio station across town. I won't drop their name on your show, you know, no free commercials. And so immediately I went to, do they know that I'm about to drop this about independent journalists? And now they're like giving the governor to me as a way to sort of like offset it. And that was my immediate thought. But when you think about how odd that is, and I think this gets into a much broader conversation, and that is, how do politicians navigate this increasingly difficult climate where you do have a lot of independent outlets? Some of them have funding from political organizations. Some of them are self-funded. How do you navigate that? Because I don't think it should be a free-for-all. I don't think it can be a free-for-all, because the last thing we want is you open up a press conference at the governor's office to whoever wants to come. It becomes some crazy shouting match, and the people who are there to get information for their viewers or listeners can't get that. So I do agree that there has to be a line drawn somewhere. But the question is, who gets to dictate that line, and should it really be politicians? And if you have, on one hand, you know, in my capacity as an independent journalist who does the Undivided podcast, if I can't get access to the governor in that capacity, but they're more than happy to let me speak to him when I'm filling in on a radio show, it's an odd sort of standard that they're setting forth. And what Jonathan Cho argues, because I interviewed him for this article, is that you have to, in this day and age, with this, first of all, media outlets that are popping up to fill a void as legacy newsrooms are dwindling by the day. I mean, I think there's like 2 full-time reporters that cover the State House in Olympia. There used to be like 30. Mm-hmm. You have to look at someone's body of work. You know, you have to look at, are they providing a journalistic service to the public? And you can't just say, oh, are they tied to a think tank? Because you could be tied to a think tank, but you could be doing very, very important, critical work where you have autonomy.
We should also look at something like the Seattle Times. They have all these sponsored segments, and they don't freeze them out. And there's different agendas behind those sponsored segments.
And I don't think they should freeze the times out. And I feel the exact same way. So the Seattle Times has something called Project Homelessness, and it is funded by outside organizations, some of which have a clear political bias. At the top of all their reporting, it says, it has this little blurb. It says, the Seattle Times' Project Homelessness is funded by BECU, the Bernier McCaw Foundation, Campion Foundation, the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation, the Rakes Foundation, the Schultz Family Foundation, Seattle Foundation, Starbucks, and the University of Washington. The Seattle Times maintains editorial control over Project Homeless content. And personally, I don't have an issue with that. They're stating it at the top of every piece. They're saying they maintain editorial control. And as ad revenue dwindles, if you want to keep newsrooms alive, you have to look to outside funding sources. So, but I don't look at that as any different than Jonathan Cho being employed by Discovery Institute, but having autonomy to pursue these really important stories on the homeless crisis. And like you said, it's not as if the governor's office is going to freeze out the times over this Project Homelessness thing. So you can see how these rules they've put in place get really gray and really murky.
In the last few minutes, we have with Brandi Cruz from the Undivided podcast. So you mentioned before your interview with the governor, and shortly after your interview with the governor, the John Carlson Show, which is on this station, heard back from the governor. And just like you were thinking, hey, I wonder if it's in response to what I'm working on. Do they know this is coming on? I started wondering to myself, is this in response to the fact that I'd say about once a month I reach out to the governor's office saying if he'll come on the show? And you've seen some of the responses that they've sent my direction, which is, no, we're not going to. And in fact, they stopped trying. I remember during COVID, when my companies were shut down, I wasn't in journalism, and that's how I got into journalism. I applied for press credentials. I got them, and I went to every single press conference virtually. I never got called on. They just want to freeze out whoever. It wasn't even like, okay, well, we're going to ask this guy and that guy, and this week, this person gets a turn. They don't want to answer the questions. They're controlling the narrative.
Yeah. And, you know, one of my main points here is, like I said, I think you have to have rules for who can actually have access to the governor in a press conference, right? But who carries out those rules, who defines those rules and who carries them out and whether they can be applied evenly is a serious question. And I bring up the case of the governor's deputy communications director, Mike Falk. And I'm thinking this is a guy that doesn't have the temperament to deal with the press. And I also point out in this article that one of their reasons, stated reasons for not allowing Jonathan Cho at these press conferences is they say that his social media conduct is unacceptable. And they have, you know, they say that he attacks other journalists on there, et cetera. And they instituted this policy. It's called their integrity policy. And it says, as public employees working in a highly visible public office, we hold ourselves to the highest professional and ethical standards. We hold anyone who purports to be a journalist to the same standards. And I found that funny because Mike Falk himself has sent out some very unprofessional tweets. He told the Republican governor of Missouri on Twitter to eat shh. Eat blank, which Jonathan Cho has said a lot of things on Twitter. He's never told an elected official to eat feces.
I don't think I've ever done that either.
And what I pointed out to the governor's office is it seems very much like rules for you, but not for me. And you're trying to hold journalists to this high standards of social media conduct while your own press office is telling a Republican governor to eat feces. It's like, you can't make this stuff up.
Randy Cruz from the Undivided Podcast, one of the three podcasts that I listen to. If you want to know the other ones, you have to keep listening to my show so I can tell you what they are. Brandy, I'll tell you later which ones they are. They are not political, actually.
Oh, cool. So, okay.
There you go. This is where I get all my politics from when I'm listening to podcasts. Brandy Cruz, thank you so much for joining us today. Really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Fake news you can rely on.
It's called fake news.
With Young Zach.
Educate yourself, you fool.
On the Ari Hoffman Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI.
I gotta tell you, with all this balloon insanity, we are living in the most absurd place in history. You should see how the news is covering this, and it's all real. Zach, what's not real? What's fake in our world today?
I got 99 problems, but a Luftballoon ain't one.
I like that.
I like that one, too.
Now it's stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're old, Zach.
For all those Ska fans out there, I prefer the Goldfinger one myself.
Oh, you know what? I kind of do, too, actually. That is top tier.
Ska fans slash, what was it, Tony Hawk Pro Skater or some game or something? I don't know.
I know what Ska is, but I don't know the song you're talking about.
That's all right. That's fine. You know, I'll tell you what, that balloon grounded Montana air travel, leaving 10 stranded in the state. The U.S. military refused to shoot down the balloon, claiming they were unsure whether its contents, what it would do to civilians below, whether or not it was dangerous. What's the worst that case that it can happen? It drops an untested biological weapon, infecting the United States population, crippling the global economy, and decimating the mental health of millions?
Yeah, I think that might be what they're worried about.
we talked about this yesterday, too, because everyone else is like, you know, shoot it down, shoot it down. I'm like, you don't know what's in there. That could be full of fortunes or fortune cookies or whatever.
Shoot it, kill it, take it down. Mike American
said it.
Way.
Mike said it, not me.
Send your angry emails to mike@kvi.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at @mikeonkvi. Or you text me at 206-421-5757. Or you could call me at 888-312-5757.
That's long distance.
Outside King County.
No cost to you. The blackouts and freezing temperatures have Texans searching for answers. Governor Greg Abbott has asked his constituents to do what he does and just roll with it.
Oh, no.
It's a wheelchair joke.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Stand up, Chuck. Bless you.
Oh, God. We're going to get so many phone calls and emails today, and somehow it's going to be
at
my
206-421-5757. Big Mike standing by to take those calls. From the Babylon Bee, maybe this will be safer, maybe it won't. Punxsutawney Phil emerges from the borough to let everyone know that there are some classified documents down there.
Wait a second. He's alive again? Didn't de Blasio kill that groundhog? Wasn't that a couple of years ago? You don't know this?
No.
Oh, you got to watch the video. So for some reason, de Blasio, when he's mayor of New York, is grabbing the groundhog, and he obviously has never touched an animal before in his life. So he picks up the groundhog, and it scampers away and dives off the stage head first.
Oh, no.
If you were in de Blasio's hands, wouldn't you do the same?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how his wife stays married to him.
I was going to say, not knowing the visual for this, I'm imagining he like picks it up, not having handled an animal. It's like, what, do you squeeze him too hard? Just love him too much?
No, but it's bad because, you know, Mike, you're a cat guy, right? You have a cat.
Yes.
You know, like when the cat dives out, when it's meant to dive out, and when it falls out?
Yeah.
It's the falling out.
Ugh.
And cats land on all fours, them groundhogs don't.
Not as much. They spend so much time in the ground.
I've never held a groundhog, but I have held a prairie dog. I assume it's similar, just smaller. They don't want to be held.
Right. That groundhog never looks happy. Ever.
No, but they do look cute.
They do. Especially when they're driving trucks off cliffs.
Don't drive angry. Yeah. Don't drive angry.
Oh, more Tom Brady news. Tom Brady announces he is permanently retiring and also open to playing for other teams.
Speaking of Groundhog Day.
Oh. Did you see the story out of, was it Finland with the ice skater?
Oh, I saw the ice skater. I chose not to mock the people with issues on our show, but we can do that right now.
Oh, well, don't.
Oh, no. That number again is 206-421-5757.
Emails also can be sent to ari@kvi.com. Or just whatever Babylon Bee's contact info is. This is theirs. Rookie trans woman picks the one sport where biological women have the advantage.
Oh, no. Did we set up Zach with a KVI email yet, or are we just going to keep giving out?
Nope, just no. Mike and Ari. M-I-K-E at... I'm going to do a few from an alternative, non-political fake news site today, The Hard Times. Gen Z concert goer keeps collection of ticket PDFs in an old shoebox.
Oh,
it's good.
And the worst part is I have done this. Well, you know, here we have our resident Gen Xer who sometimes identifies as a millennial, Mike, our geriatric millennial.
You do not call me that, young one. You do not say that again.
I have the mic button. You don't. It's Free Speech Friday.
Yeah.
First Amendment Friday.
But you were saying you have a collection of PDFs?
Not necessarily a collection, but I do have a couple. I printed out my first concert, Vans Warped Tour ticket in 2013.
Nice.
Keep that around.
Do you put it on special paper, or is it just the regular stuff?
Oh, just, you know, what comes out of the printer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But there's a bunch of shows that I've been to that I have, like, no, like, physical memento of at all. I mean, I used to keep stubs, but, like, I mean, even for, like, movies and stuff, but no more.
I end up ripping the little schedule off the door at a punk show club. I rip that little thing on my way out.
Get a set
You're
list
a vandal child.
Well, they're done with it at the end of the
Yeah, they're done with it.
Oh, anyway, one more from the Hard Times. Local environmentalist tired of being called a scrub for polluting less and saving money by riding in the passenger side of his best friend's ride.
I was wondering if you're going that direction. That's very good.
That song stuck in my head.
And I have a new segment here on Fake News Friday. We're going to play artificial intelligence or non-intelligent. I'm going to read you a question, and you're going to tell me if the response is from AI, ChatGPT, or a Democrat.
Love this.
So I asked ChatGPT and search for answers from the question, can you define a woman? This is the response. You tell me, Democrat or AI. The response is, a woman is an adult human female beyond biological characteristics. The definition of a woman varies across cultures and societies and can include different aspects such as gender identity, social roles, personal characteristics. It is important to note that every woman is unique and individual, and there is no single definition that can capture the full complexity and diversity of a woman.
Computer. Well, it had me at AI at the beginning because it actually said what a woman is, but then it lost me at the end. I don't know, man. That's a toughie.
So we're running out of time. You going to go AI or are you going to go Democrat?
I'm going to go AI.
You got it right.
Nice.
All right, that's it for Fake News Friday.
Well, Zach, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
570 KVI and the Ari Hoffman Show.
I want you to get up now.
Taking off the gloves.
I want you to get mad.
Telling it like it is.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcoming Lars.
Unleashed.
One of my favorite parts of working here is the fact that I get to talk to my buddy Lars Larson every single week. Plus, we text and we talk to each other other times, too, that are not on the air. But Lars, news broke yesterday while I was on air of this balloon that apparently has been flying for days over the U.S. And Joe Biden has done absolutely nothing about it. I shouldn't be surprised. Hasn't done anything about the border. Left $85 billion worth of military equipment for the Taliban. This is just the next thing. But now this Chinese spy balloon is flying over the country. He's not doing anything about it.
No, Ari, did anybody call Congressman Swalwell of California and tell him that his ride home has arrived?
Funny you should mention it. We did a whole bit yesterday on the show making fun of him about that.
Well, the fact is, you know, he did sleep with a Chi-Com spy, Fang Fang. He can't be a bigger joke. But this business about the Chi-Coms putting a spy balloon over American sovereign space and without our permission, and then Joe doesn't have the guts to tell the Pentagon, shoot the damn thing down. Use it as target practice. Get up there and knock that thing out of the air.
Yeah, that's what I think we should do, but yet they didn't do anything about it for days, and now the media is just finding out now? I mean, how did local media not go, what's this thing in the sky? I mean, what, 3 days it's been up there for, and we just found out about it on day three?
Yeah, I don't even know what altitude it's at, but I got the impression it was at extremely high altitudes. And the Chi-Coms have some answering, some explaining to do. And I think Joe Biden has his chance. He won't do it because he's bought and paid for by Beijing. But if he were to say, how dare you put this over our country? In fact, go back and replay some of what the Soviets said to the United States when they shot down Francis Gary Powers in one of our spy planes that was over the old Soviet Union, and say, you don't have any right to be over our territory. This is a territorial invasion of our country.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, at this point, I wonder if, God forbid, a missile came from Mexico or Canada into our country, Joe Biden would probably just sit there and go, yeah, I don't even know what century I'm in right now.
No, he doesn't. And fact is, the cartels, as I understand it, have been loosing a few shots across our southern border. And Joe doesn't do anything about that either, does he?
Nothing at all. And then you got this connection now has been revealed today. Fox News had a story on John Kerry's ties to China that's now under investigation. AOC was giving money to a Chinese media company along with two other Democrats and one Republican. I mean, does China just own the U.S. at this point?
It sounds like they do. And really, all joking aside, people need to see the connections here, that you had Joe Biden's son, who was even a concern to the Obama administration, you know, and at least ostensibly Joe was on their side, saying, Joe, your son's business activities are getting in the way of U.S. foreign policy, of U.S. diplomacy. And Joe said, oh, no, there's no problem there whatsoever. But the fact is, CEFC, which is a Chi-Com energy company, paid his son millions of dollars, and we have good reason to believe that at least some of those dollars ended up in Joe Biden's pocket, maybe even paid the rent for Hunter Biden to live at that house in Delaware where we found classified documents. Can this guy look any dirtier than he is right now?
No, of course not. And of course, here's the interesting thing. The media was really hard on these documents. Now they've kind of loosened up on the documents. They're barely touching the laptop story. Originally, we all thought this is how they were going to take down Joe Biden, put somebody like Gavin Newsom up for president. But it seems like now they're backing away from covering this. Do you think they were just desperate for the ratings for a week and changed tune?
I hate to say it, but the mainstream media today is a lot like, you know, a squirrel. Hey, shiny object. And they the minute something looks less interesting, they jump to something else. They don't have a lot of institutional history built in. Look, I say this is going to sound like I'm defending people who are long in the tooth like me, but when you have institutional memory, you say, hey, this happened before. And if you're talking to somebody who's 25, they're like, when? You know, they go, I don't remember that. No, because it happened before you were born. No disrespect to them, but you have to have some institutional memory to say, how have we handled this before? And frankly, you know, right now, Joe Biden needs to explain. He keeps promising he's going to be transparent. He's been anything but on the document scandal. He needs to explain to Americans why were you holding on to, illegally holding on to classified documents at her home, some of which seem to relate at the right point in time to your son's sleazy business dealings in Ukraine, where you're now telling us that we've got to send hundreds of billions of dollars, is now over $100 billion committed, although not paid yet, and send hardware like M1 Abrams tanks. And then they ask for F-16s. He says, well, I said no to that. Well, a few months ago, he said no to M1 Abrams tanks before he said yes.
Right. And he keeps waffling back and forth. I mean, at this point, you got to wonder why this investigation on Hunter Biden seems to never be going anywhere. We know all the stuff. He admitted the laptop's real. And I love how stupid he is. He admits the laptop's real because he's trying to get daddy to go after all the people who are talking about it.
Well, and that's what's really crazy. He did an interview not so long ago in which he told a network news reporter, I'm trying to remember which network, he said, I don't know if it's my laptop or now. What or not? And yet there were all the reasons to believe it was. He dropped it off at a repair shop. He signed the receipt. He put down his phone number, you know, and then his lawyers, when they found out that the laptop was in the hands of the repair shop, which now owns it, and that they can do anything they want, like hand it to the FBI, his lawyers demanded its return. And then he goes on network TV more than a year after that and says, yeah, I'm really not sure if it's mine or if it's somebody else's. But now he's dead sure that it's his, and that he wants people punished for telling the American public about this. I mean, to use a comparison, it'd be like Nixon saying, I want to sue people for telling the American public about the plumbers.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane, and only a Democrat can get away with this. I mean, can you imagine if that laptop belonged to one of the Trump kids? If we knew everything we knew about Hunter Biden, that piece in the Daily Mail the other day about how he was essentially blackmailing his own office workers for sex, using their salaries and stuff. Can you imagine if that was one of the Trump kids? The stories would never be ending.
No, the double standard. Let me give you one from the Northwest. You know that an FTX executive gave $500,000 to the Democrat Party of Oregon. I've been covering this since early December, late November, and I've been saying they received the money under a fake name, which is a felony under state law for a political party to take $500,000 under a fake name. We know it's a fake name because it's one of the top executives of FTX. And now you've got the new governor of Oregon who's saying nothing about it. She got elected on those FTX dollars. Her Secretary of State, also a Democrat, arranged to fire the head of elections for the state and put who in charge? The former deputy director of the Democrat Party of Oregon. So that woman named Molly Wu has said she will be the one who will investigate and see if there was any wrongdoing in the Democrat Party taking $500,000 illegally from FTX under a fake name and now refusing to return the money so it can be paid back to the investors who were defrauded, and that they helped get a governor elected based on that $500,000. But we're going to have the former head of the Democrat Party investigate the Democrats and see if the Democrats broke the law?
Oh my God, the hypocrisy is just absolutely insane. It's so crazy. And yet they are allowed to get away with it. The media is the number one donation these guys get in campaign funds because they are the ones who do all this for them. Lars Larson, you can catch his show every single weekday from 12 to 3 right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Lars, you have a great weekend, buddy.
It's always my pleasure to talk to you. Thanks, Ari.
It is time to feel good as we wrap up another amazing episode, another amazing week of the Ari Hoffman Show right here on Talk Radio 570 KVM. Before we get to our good news giveaway, some good news headlines for you. Well, you may have missed Groundhog Day, but it definitely feels like the Bill Murray edition because, once again, Tom Brady is announcing his retirement. How many times have we done this already now, Mike? I think three.
Okay. At least. Maybe two. I don't know.
So this one only cost him his marriage. Oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, no.
No.
But let's talk about that for a sec because, like, you know, he goes to retire and then he's like, nah, I think I got a little more gas left in the tank. And then he goes to Tampa Bay and does the thing.
Yeah.
And turns around a lot of hearts and minds, including one Big Mike over here. I've hated Tom Brady for as long as I can remember. Like, keep in mind, there's like the whole you mad bro era of the rivalry between like the Seahawks and the Patriots there.
Sure.
So that stuff has always been top of mind for me. But like when he went to Tampa Bay and did the thing, I was like, oh, he is the GOAT. Mm-hmm. He is the greatest of all time. You know what? And I haven't said a bad thing since. until he continued.
Right.
And something like with these professional athletes or aging musicians or whatever, there's something in there where you can't turn it off. You can't stop. You don't know how or something like that. So it's, I've always been interested in the mentality of like, well, quit while you're ahead. No, I still want to go because I don't know anything else. Point being, where I'm going with all this is that it cost him everything.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine that some of the conversations he had at home would be like, okay, cool, I'm going to hang it up. Well, you know what? I want to go do this thing. I want to see if I can still do it. Then he goes and does it. So I'm sure the family would be like, hey, man, so you went and do the thing. So you want to be a family now? No, man, I still got some gas left in the tank. And it's like, you know what? I can't anymore.
Yeah.
No more.
And she took half the rings in the process. I mean, he's only got what now, five? No, but the thing is, I wonder. So let's take Michael Jordan for a second. Michael Jordan went off and did the whole baseball thing for a minute. Everybody went, you suck at this. Don't do this again. And then he came back for basketball. Then he retired. And then he came back for basketball. And then there was a whole thing about he doesn't get his number anymore. How to use a different number. Do we retire him with this number or that number? Which one? And it kind of took a little bit of the shine off him. But now you say Michael Jordan and people go, Michael Jordan. Question is, did that kind of take the shine off long term? I'm not sure it did. I really don't think it did. I think he's still Michael Jordan. Does this take the shine off Tom Brady, who had to earn that from a lot of people? Or years from now, do we just go, he's Tom Brady? Who gives a crap about all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think history will remember him as favorably as history remembers Michael Jordan.
Gotcha. Okay. You're the football guy. You're the football expert. I yield to you. Some other good local news, by the way.
Also, though, incidentally, go watch that 80 for Brady movie. That looks all,
go
like
check
a whole
that
lot
out.
Of fun.
Yeah, that's right. I actually want to see that. So
that looks cute.
I may go watch the old lady. Anyway, according to Como News, Seattle's beloved 24-hour breakfast diner is reopening, although it's no longer open 24 hours. Best Cafe, known as a place for a greasy spoon at 3 a.m., closed in September 2020 because of the coronavirus. The diner posted to social media on Wednesday announcing their reopening in the same location at 7311 Aurora Avenue North in Seattle near Green Lake. Well, that's kind of gutsy. The diner's new hours are Wednesday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., and Saturday through Sunday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Can't imagine why this place isn't open late at night, all hours here in our beautiful Seattle. I can't imagine any reason for that whatsoever.
Yeah, man, eggs are expensive.
Yeah. Also, according to King 5, there's a new experience coming to Climate Pledge Arena. Fans will be able to go through an immersive tour through the world's most sustainable arena. Okay, right off the bat, that's a complete lie. The arena is not sustainable. They buy carbon offsets. But this is the good news segment. The tour will take patrons on a 75-minute journey through the team locker room, star dressing rooms, and other typically off-limit areas, including the owner's suite located at the Pitchbook Suite level at Center Ice. By the way, it sounds like a lot of fun. I love stadium tours. That's a little thing I like to do with the family, so I may actually sign up for this. But before I forget, your chance to win fantabulous prizes. Today, we are giving away Daniel's Broiler gift card, $50, in fact. Daniel's Broiler has been a Seattle favorite since 1980. Features USDA prime steak and other specialties, including chicken and fresh seafood, as well as a selection of high-end spirits, wine, and cocktails. Daniel's Broiler is open now in Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, and South Lake Union. With dine-in, take-out, and delivery, check out danielsbroiler.com. To reserve a table, place your takeout delivery order, and more. We're also giving away a copy of 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement by Brian Evans of Madrona Financial and CPA, sponsored by Madrona Financial Services. Learn how to design your retirement to support your quality of life for 30-plus years from Brian Evans of Madrona Financial and CPA, a local company working to help you grow deep financial roots in future financial storms. Don't blow your life savings away. Visit MadronaFinancial.com for more information and discover how you can create a rooted wealth plan today. Last but certainly not least, we are giving away two tickets to 2023. See Seattle Boat Show, Friday, today through Saturday, February 11th, sponsored by the Media Place, Inc. And if you go on Sunday, you might see some radio celebrities. sailing into town this Friday. February 3rd, the Seattle Boat Show is the West Coast's largest display of boats, gadgets, gear, and accessories inside at Lumen Field Event Center and afloat at Bell Harbor Marina. Presented by Port of Seattle and Union Marine, the show features fun family activities and attractions. Get dozens of free fishing, boating, and sailing seminars. Get your tickets, all the information, and more at seattleboatshow.com. All you have to do in order to win these fantabulous prizes is be caller number 10 at 1-888-312-5757. That's 1-888-312-5757. Locals can call 206-421-5757. Caller number 10 wins a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card, a copy of Seven Steps to a Successful Retirement by Brian Evans of Madrona Financial and CPAs, sponsored by Madrona Financial Services, and two, count them, two tickets to the 2023 Seattle Boat Show, which starts today through Saturday, February 11th, sponsored by the Media Place, Inc. Phone lines are open now at 1-888-312-5757, or locals can call 206-421-5757. Looking for caller number 10. Mike is standing by to take your calls. That's going to about do it for us today, but fear not. On Monday, it'll be 570 ARI as I fill in for John, so you get me in the morning and the afternoon, and we'll have more insane stories, more exciting guests, and of course, more giveaways. You've been listening to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.